Welcome, everyone, into the B-Section Podcast, brought to you by The Morning Times and The Daily Review. I'm Kirk Loveson. I'm joined with Logan Hill and David Goff. Boys, we are back from a little two-week hiatus. Certainly a lot has happened since then in the high school sports world as well as nationally. We'll get into all of it. I think the best thing to do is probably just to get caught up and use this episode to recap a little bit about what has been going on, what we've been up to around the Valley in terms of coverage and what we can look forward to. So, Logan, why don't you start us off a little bit? What's your world been like the last 2 weeks and what are we getting into?
Sure. So I'm just sitting here right now trying to write down. Baseball, softball season have gotten going, track season as well. I'm trying to think about which teams I've seen already this year. On the baseball diamond, it's at least Athens, Troy, Canton, Northeast Bradford, and Towanda. Been to a couple of Canton games now because they've had a couple days where they're playing and not many other teams are. So that's the way it works, is if nobody else is going but you are, I'll be there, right? So they started out 3-0. They dropped their game Monday to South Williamsport, somebody that they can potentially see down the road in districts. They got back into it. They were down 8-2. They scored three runs. I think it was the fifth or the sixth inning to kind of be right back within striking distance. Couldn't get the job done. But that was a good South Williamsport team. Other than that, I saw Towanda had a tough one against Elk Lake that I went to last Friday. Elk Lake, another really good team. They're coming over from District 2. But I liked what I saw from what I think can be there for the Towanda team, I guess I would say. They didn't have a great day that day, but looks like they have some guys. They used two different pitchers in the game. Trying to think who else. Troy opened the league against Athens, the defending league champs, and sort of a rival. At least these crops of kids, it feels like they're kind of feel that rivalry with one another. And Troy was able to take that one 4-2. It was a close game. It was a well-played game on both sides. I think Athens is kind of still trying to figure out, hey, we've graduated pretty much our whole pitching staff. Where do the innings come from? Where are we going to get guys in these spots? So they didn't look bad. I think it was their first game of the season, too. That was early last week. Other than that, NEB started out 3-0, or 2-0, that is. They played Canton. That was a close game, till it wasn't. Canton exploded for a bunch of runs in one inning to kind of pull away. Softball-wise, Towanda opened the season with a really big win over Wyalusing, I think it was. It was like 24-3 or something like that. They were just mashing the ball. They're going to have a shot this year. They went to districts last year. I'm trying to think who else. Troy softball got a win over Athens that same day I was there for Athens. Troy baseball. Canton girls, they played Millville a couple weeks back. They got a big win. They've had a couple of games now. They later lost that week to NEB. NEB softball should be another good squad this year. This is kind of an interesting portion of the year for me because these are teams that I've covered before.
Right.
Like, everything else to this point has been new, but I actually, what's today, the third?
Yep. Yeah.
1 year. Been working here 1 year today as of the taping of this.
Oh, wow.
So. Yeah.
Okay.
So,
man, do I feel like a jerk? I didn't bring a cake or anything.
That's okay.
We should have been celebrating.
These are teams that I've seen before, so it's interesting to kind of follow the storylines from last season. So it's still really getting started. This week has been kind of a drag just with all the weather. Not a lot of games getting played. Hopefully this is the last bad week and the weather turns, and then we're able to get a lot of baseball and softball in. Other than that, I was at Canton Track yesterday for a quad meet. It was rainy. It was a little nasty, yeah. But Canton, Towanda, and Williamson and Northeast Bradford all out there. And the same usual suspects you would expect for NEB. It was Grayson Loudermilk, Creed doing on the boys' side, kind of getting it done. Aiden Capper won the hurdles. Anna Dunn won the 400 sprint. It's called the 400 dash on the call sheet, but I've always written it as the sprint. I guess I just took that from...
I always just called it the 400 meter.
400 meter, yeah.
So 400 isn't so much a sprint. Because it's a whole lap.
It's like that mix, right?
It's like the in-between.
Yeah.
Where I'd always cut it off was the 4 to the 800. The 800 would be the run. The 400 would be the sprint to me. Because I feel, I don't know, when I think about it in my mind, it's like, yeah, it's a whole lap, but like you're probably going at one gear, I would think, as long as you can the whole way. Neither here nor there.
None of us will ever do it. None of us will ever do it.
Yeah, so other than that, I mean, not too much going on. Like I said, the weather kind of putting a hold on everything this week. But, my last point, I guess, before I kick it over to David, a lot of new uniforms this year.
Ooh.
And pretty much good reviews from
people looking
Logan
fresh.
Hill. They look pretty cool a lot
like
so
it.
Far.
A lot of new uniforms in general, just in sports. It's kind of cool to see it happening around here, too. So that's the Daily Review coverage area. Keep a lookout for more coverage from Logan as we get more deep into the season. Spring sports are fully going. David, talk about what's going on in the Valley.
Well, to begin the season, the the baseball softball season, Logan and I were actually at the same event with Sarah and Ken.
It was terrible. It should have been postponed. I'm sorry. I'm gonna say that.
It was the only games going on that day.
It snowed. Yeah. It was snowing.
Yeah. It was very cold. But that day I just kind of decided, Sarah and Ken, baseball and softball, were playing at the same time right next to each other. And I just kind of decided I'll just cover the baseball game because historically it was probably going to be the more competitive game. You're saying how Logan knows the territory now. This is my first time with the spring, so I didn't really know what to expect. I was like, I'll just cover the baseball game. Ken won that game 12-4. It was not that fun of a game to cover. Meanwhile, on the other side, Sarah softball had a 14-run sixth inning to win that game 16-8, I believe, over Ken. And I wish I could have anticipated that because
you never know when it's going to happen.
Sarah last year ended a 28-game losing streak, had two wins all season long. That was game one, and they won. Awesome. That's a big thing.
The other problem with that was Sarah's softball scoreboard wasn't working.
Yeah, so I couldn't keep track.
If you weren't standing there watching from pitch one, you would have no... Like, I asked somebody, because I was bouncing back and forth trying to take some pictures, and if the score... That was crazy when I got the book that night and was trying to put it in the paper.
Wow.
They're still young. They're still kind of growing. I know the next game they lost 18-0 to Williamson. So it's gonna be ups and downs. It was really cool that they won that first game because it's like, hey, we got to win already. That's good for them.
Right.
The other thing I saw baseball wise was Waverly baseball against Norwich. It was their first game on that new turf field at Waverly behind the school. It was really nice. I wish they had a press box, but they don't. I was told by Rich McIntosh that they will probably next year, which is very exciting for me. They're coming off an 18-4 season, which is a good season. They're bringing back a lot of people, so there's some expectations there. And they won that game 18-1. Ben Shaw had a 4-for-5 day with 5 RBIs. Really, that he was 4-for-4 and that he reached base via air on his last at bat, and it was a bad hopper toward the second baseman that I was going to consider it a hit myself. The scorebook said otherwise, but he had an RBI on every single at bat he had, so he had a big day. He was the 8-hole hitter, but they had a big day, 18-1. I think it's a little odd that the Southern Tier Athletic Conference, which is Waverly's new conference this year, the softball they'll have a mercy rule. So like Waverly softball beat Norwich today 13-1 in 5 innings. Waverly baseball won 18-1 and they played all 7. So baseball doesn't have a mercy rule, which is just odd. But
I wonder if that's a league thing.
Yeah, it's a league thing, and for whatever reason, stack baseball and stack softball are different rules.
Interesting.
But Waverly baseball continued their strong start on Monday morning at Seton Catholic. A combined no hitter from Ronan Ault and Jack Pfeiffer. Ronan Ault had 5 innings pitched. Jack Pfeiffer finished off with 2, and the final score was 8-0. I forget exactly the hitting summary, but I know Ben Shaw was 2-for-4 again. Matthias Wells was 3-for-4 with 2 doubles and a home run.
Okay. Is there a younger Pfeiffer?
Yes.
Wow.
Jay Pfeiffer and Jack Pfeiffer. Jay Pfeiffer is the leadoff hitter for the team, and Jack Pfeiffer seems like he's kind of the closer. Matthias Wells had a big game that day. He had 6 or 7 of the 8 runs batted in, so big day for him. I haven't gone out to see Athens just yet. I was at Athens, Sarah and Tawanda track at Athens last week. That was interesting. Athens won that. Athens should have a pretty strong season track wise. And the one big takeaway from that day for me was they were a very small team last year, didn't have a whole lot of success. I don't know that they had a girls team last year. Oh, no, they did. Rose. It was just Rose.
I was going to say, I think they just had a couple of kids.
Yeah. But they have a bigger team this year. And the one big takeaway from that for me this past meet was head coach John Stevens saying, last year, I don't even know that people knew we were at the meet. This year, they knew. So I think they're excited about all the potential they have, all the talent they have now compared to last year. Rose Chikanga is probably going to be their best athlete again as a runner. But so that's kind of what I've seen so far. Like we said, it's a rainy week, so we haven't covered a whole lot.
Yep. We're in the early stages of the spring sports season, and everyone listening knows in the Northeast, you're going to have cancellations and makeups, so to be sure and you can keep up on all that and keep track and up to date, make sure you get a copy of the Daily Morning Times.
A couple more shout outs to
go for it.
Some kids who are going to continue their sport in college. So the one thing that has been going on, I've been to 3, but by the time this comes out on Friday, I'll have been to 4 signing ceremonies over the last couple of weeks. The first one was Aiden Reed of Sayre. He was an offensive lineman for the Redskins, and he wasn't expecting to play. He wasn't expecting to go to college, period. But he got an opportunity to go play for Mansfield Sprint football, and he was expecting to be an electrician out of high school, but now he's going to be studying criminal justice because of his new, now that he has more football to his career, which is kind of a cool story. Mackenzie LaFour is a wrestler for Waverly Girls. She is the first Waverly Girls wrestler to go to college and wrestle. She's going to be going to DeUville University in Buffalo.
Buffalo, yep.
Evan Cooper of Athens, who is the two-time NTL golfer of the year and two-time state finalist. He never picked up the sport of golf until COVID happened right before his freshman year. He was originally playing baseball, but he said that he didn't want to just lay around the house all day. All that entire pandemic situation, and he ended up picking up golf. Turned out to be a good thing, because now he's going to Virginia Wesleyan and be golfing there.
Talk about picking up a game quick that I haven't been able to pick up in 10 years of trying to play it.
Exactly. And then tomorrow, Thursday, so before this podcast comes out, Liliana Smith of Waverly, a volleyball player, will be signing to play for SUNY Delhi Volleyball.
Okay. Congratulations to all
of
them.
So a bunch of kids continuing their sports careers at the college level.
Yeah, love to see that. All right. Yeah, again, keep track of everything with the Morning Times and the Daily Review and what Logan and David are bringing to you. We'll have cancellations. We'll have makeups. A lot happens in the Northeast when it talks spring sports with the weather. We're about to get a whole mess of it here this week, so who knows what will be scheduled and what will get moved, but these guys will have you covered no matter what, and we're looking forward to a good spring sports season. Mm-hmm. Nationally, a lot's gone on 2 weeks. We got everything from NFL trade news to MLB opening week and March Madness in between. So I guess we'll just start hitting close to home here. Bills have traded Stephon Diggs.
Let me see if I still got time.
I see him reaching for that button.
His podcast.
Nope. Wrong one. That's it.
Yeah, absolutely.
Nope. Not that one. Not that one.
Oh, this guy's swimmingly.
There it is.
There's Boom. The wagons might have come to a screeching halt. But Stephon Diggs traded to the Houston Texans for a 2025 second-round pick. And unfortunately, a lot of dead cap money and some growing pains here for the next couple seasons. Knee-jerk reactions, non-Bills fans. What do you guys think of the trade when it was announced right out of the gate?
I did not see it coming. Okay. It feels like that relationship has kind of been sour for a little bit, though. So I'm not going to say it was out of the realm of possibility, but to move off of a star, he's a star wide receiver.
Yeah.
He still is. There's no reason to say he's not. When you don't, if there was a stable of horses behind him, and it was like, okay, we're moving on him to get the young guy some burn, but there's just not.
No.
So
wide receiver one now is currently Curtis Samuel.
And to see that they're taking on more dead money than what his cap hit was. So now his cap hit was around $28 million. Now that they traded him, they take that on plus $3 million more. It was almost like, let's get divorced. Let's finalize this.
The last conversation we had on this podcast a couple weeks ago was talking about how the Bills just unloaded half their roster because of cap situation. And now just more dead money on top of it while also losing your number one receiver for a next year's second round pick. What do you think, David?
I didn't realize how much the Bills were kind of hanging on by a thread.
Yeah.
You see the news of Stephon Diggs getting traded to Houston, it's like, oh, then who the heck do they have?
Right. It's kind of been a trending thing we talk about here. We've been saying, oh, the window's closing for Buffalo. How closed is it? Is it slammed shut? Do they have a chance? Now it's really looking like it's time to maybe start transitioning to kind of a new plan or era in Buffalo. I don't think it's going to be some five-year, oh, no, we're in the dumpster rebuild. I think there's probably some plan at place here, and there's still enough pieces, and certainly your quarterback's still Josh Allen, but there's some work that needs done now.
You like to think that as long as Josh Allen's there, their floor is relatively high, vying for the playoffs year in and year out.
Yeah.
Right? He's a top three candidate for MVP most seasons at this point in his career. And I think you're right. I just think we have to get out of the red into, what is it? Is it the green?
Black.
Or it's the black.
Yeah.
I was going to say into the black.
Yeah.
And then go from there,
right,
and be smarter about the deals that we make, and maybe not sign a Von Miller who's 38 years old.
Or, and you look at what they are re-signing, you sign your left tackle to protect your star quarterback. That's genuinely what you start doing in a rebuild. Mm-hmm. You start to build from the ground up around your quarterback. So it's like, man, are we really going back to square one here? Or, again, there's still enough talent. I'm going to predict right now, I think the Bills trade and move up in the draft for wide receiver, the new wide receiver number one.
Is one great draft can turn this fortune around very quickly. So
I think they probably make the move to go get Allen, a true young number one. But to do that, you're going to have to at least get to nine.
Do you think your guy Odunze is going to be the Bill?
Thank you, David. That's exactly what I'm hoping. I hope they trade up to pick nine. Marvin Harrison Jr. goes first from the receivers. Malik Nabers goes second. And the Bills grab Rome Odunze, who I think will be the steal of the first round. And if it somehow falls to Buffalo, man, this pod is, it's like it's scripted.
The jersey could not be ordered fast enough.
It could not be ordered fast enough. Unfortunately, there's one that could not be put away quick enough. I do have a Color Rush Stephon Diggs jersey. Well,
what if Odunze wears 14, then you just get some duct tape?
I workshop it. And we'll do it here for arts and crafts on the pod someday, but that's really it NFL-wise. We just had to touch on that because it's connected to what
Hassan Reddick got traded.
Well, I was going to say, I did want to bring that up.
Yeah, go for that, David.
I get it. I think Hassan Reddick's asking price was going to be too steep for what the Eagles were trying to get.
What does he do for a new contract this year?
Next year.
Let's lay it out, though. Hassan Reddick traded from the Eagles to the Jets.
Which, it was effectively, without being a trade, it wasn't a straight-up trade between Bryce Huff and Hassan Reddick, but that's effectively what it was. They got pass rushers.
Yeah.
And once the Bryce Huff deal happened, it was like, well, then either Josh Sweat or Hassan Reddick is probably going to be the odd man out. It's hard for me. You can make all the jokes about me being Philly and Temple and all that you want, but like,
we don't make that many jokes, do we?
But
I wouldn't say you lean into that too much.
But Hassan Reddick was a Temple Owl the same exact 4 years I was a Temple Owl.
No, that's cool.
Fact that he was an Eagle was so cool. The fact that he was as awesome as he was during the Super Bowl season was awesome, and it just stinks that it was only a 2 year thing.
No, I will not push back on you at all, because the same reason you say that is like, I like talking about Stephon Diggs because his
Maryland
career started
in
Maryland.
Yeah.
Like, he went to Minnesota, then he went to Buffalo. Like, he gets flirted with the Ravens every time something like this is coming up. Yeah. So I mean,
not only was Hassan Reddick a Philly guy, but he played in the same stadium in college as he did for the Eagles. And it's just like, this is perfect, absolutely perfect. So I was hoping beyond hope that they were going to somehow make something happen. But I get it. It just stinks. I think hopefully Bryce Huff is as good as he's
advertised,
been. And hopefully Josh Sweat kind of has to bounce back here and it won't matter as much. I don't know.
I can tell you, as a Bills fan who played the Jets twice a year, Bryce Huff's really good.
Well, I mean, the Jets beat the Eagles this year too, so.
On the topic of the Jets, I saw something from Schefter yesterday. It was about the NFL's like incentive-based performance scale or something
Rogers
like that.
Rodgers is last.
Well, Rodgers made $81 and some change last year for his performance. He played four snaps.
For running out of the tunnel.
He played four snaps. So to make anything, it's just like,
sprinted out of that tunnel for opening night.
Well, it's like, I don't have the math correct in my head when I say this, but like you say, like someone has, like a baseball player is being paid $25 million per season. It's like $5,000 per pitch.
Yeah, I mean, Rodgers basically.
Don't get me wrong. The money that you make in professional sports, if you're in the upper echelon of players, is absurd. But like,
so basically, Rodgers breathing gives him $81.
He made $81 a play last year. Yeah. But he's back. We'll get into all that later on. Let's move on to, I guess we'll end with baseball because we both got a lot. Everyone's got a lot to say in terms of their teams. And March Madness is bigger nationally right now in terms of brackets and how we've been off since it started. How's everyone?
I think I need to start.
How'd everyone's brackets do?
I think I need to, and this is why I think I need to start. I wrote a paper bracket that I posted online. That was kind of just a gag bracket. Yeah. It was Western Kentucky, the Hilltoppers, play on words. Logan Hill, play on words. My bracket that I submitted two brackets into like a pool with my friends that I do every year. And my first one, I picked Kentucky.
Okay.
Yeah, so.
Tough opening.
If you follow college basketball, you know how that went. They lost to 14 seed Oakland. Jack Golke hit 10 three-pointers.
Golke.
We didn't tape that week. I was imagining what we would say about that game, but I watched the closing minutes of it from my phone, and it was brutal. So, shame on me for thinking this was the Wildcats year. The other bracket I had was Tennessee, so they made a nice run at it, but.
Bracket I had was also Tennessee. Interesting. Yeah, David, as I walked out that day, David and I talked to each other, we were both, you might be thinking of something different. We both said, man, if Kentucky loses, Cal on the, he's got to be on the hot seat, right? I think we were both like, they should fire him or something. Sure enough, they lost again.
Sorry, excuse me.
How about your finals, David? Your bracket still alive?
No.
Or what'd you think of the Kentucky? Cal should be on the hot seat?
Well, I guess he's staying.
I was going to say, that moment's coming past. They're not going to get rid of him.
They're never going to, right?
Unless Rick Pitino comes to them and says, hey, I want the Kentucky job. Yeah. Give it back to me.
But
he's just got a job for life.
So Logan's loss of a champion on day one is seemingly worse than mine, but I also lost my champion on day two, the first round, just like Kentucky. So I had Auburn
Tigers.
So, the thing is, though, for Logan... at least in our little mini morning times pool, has rebounded pretty nicely.
I've not checked that since I submitted. So am I in a good spot?
If UConn loses at any point, you win.
Oh, heck yeah. Yep. Did we put money on this?
No.
We should have.
But Nicole is in position to win if UConn wins the championship. But if UConn loses the Final Four or the championship, you win. So
I mean, everyone just should have went chalk.
Yeah.
Well, we should have just took the Purdue's and the UConn's, and we just should have done what you should do.
I despise UConn, so I was not going to be partial to them at all.
I kind of want to dig into that in 1 second. But the bracket that I do with my friends, one of our friends' dad is entered because our buddy sent the link out and he said, share it with whoever you want. Yeah, he's going to win, and I haven't looked at his bracket, but he is UConn as the champ. I have a feeling he probably went pretty chalk, and
it's probably UConn versus Purdue.
He's going to get paid. And I just, to me, what's the fun of filling out a bracket if you're just going to go all chalk? But why? Let's talk about it. Why do we despise UConn?
I grew up a Villanova fan.
Okay.
And that is the best Big East era of all time. The 2000s, you got Syracuse, you got UConn, you got Villanova, you got West Virginia, you got Louisville. The incredible Big East. And that was in the 2000s. UConn was the powerhouse that it was. They won the championship in 2005. So they were always the team to beat. And Villanova...
Before they were Villanova, right?
Unfortunately, when I was a Villanova fan, they weren't the elite team.
Were you still a Villanova fan? We've talked about this before, but I can't remember. Were you still a Villanova fan by the time they were... in
champions? No. No. I was a junior in
I was
going
to say you were probably at Temple then, right?
Yeah. So I hated UConn growing up just because they are the really good team in the same conference as the team I liked. And then I started to dislike Villanova when I got to Temple. But as I went to Temple, my first year at Temple was there in the American Athletic Conference, which was the old Big East. So UConn hadn't left it yet. So UConn was now in Temple's conference. So then I still hated UConn. And my freshman year, UConn won the national championship. So it was just easy to hate on UConn, and actually some of the best basketball games I went to.
What was that, 2014?
It was that weird year where, like...
Because that wasn't Kemba, right? Kemba was before that?
This was Shabazz Napier.
Yeah. Okay, I remember this now.
So that was the weird year where UConn and Kentucky, which are Blue Bloods, were in the national championship game, but they were like the 7th and 8th seed. It was nuts. But... my junior and senior year, Temple had some electric home games against UConn where Temple beat them both times. And actually, Temple had a winning record against UConn when I was at Temple, which is crazy to think about now. But those games were so intense that my hatred for UConn has always remained the way it is. And then UConn complained about being the American and kind of whined their way to the new Big East. So I don't like them for that either. But yeah, that's kind of my whole UConn hatred history.
Let's go from hate to feel good. Who's the feel good story of the tournament? Is it DJ Burns?
Yes.
NC State?
I don't think there's any other conversation.
It's got to be, right? Yeah. Because, I'm so excited for him versus Edie.
Yeah.
I think it's going to be awesome.
Go ahead.
I can't even think of, as much as I don't like UConn, I kind of want the Purdue UConn championship matchup because I can't think, what's the big kid?
Donovan Clingan.
Yeah. I think Clingan and Edie, I think that would be a really fun matchup if we get to that. But yeah. NC State has to be.
Don't hit the table.
Sorry.
You're okay.
Yeah, no. NC State, this is a really, really fun story. They weren't supposed to be in the tournament, win 5 games in 5 days, and then they're just continuing.
So there was this kid that I overlapped with at Maryland. He's still there. He was a couple years younger than me. And I saw a tweet from him before the Duke NC State game, and he said that something about how, oh, this isn't a Cinderella run, NC State shouldn't even be here, it took a Virginia missed free throw and a miracle heave, and I'm just like, isn't that exactly what a Cinderella run is? Like, if you want to be miserable about it, that's fine, but there's no reason you have to say that this isn't what it is. That's
kind of the definition of a Cinderella run.
That's what I'm saying.
Yeah.
And I almost responded, I try not to get into Twitter battles, but I couldn't understand that. It was like, they won 5 games in 5 days to win the ACC tournament. They beat Duke. They beat Virginia. They beat North Carolina. And then they won. And then they had to play Duke again. And then they beat them again. So I just didn't get that. They are the story. And with such a fun player as DJ Burns as kind of their leader. So I think they're definitely the most feel-good story. And who's the other? It's UConn, Alabama, and it's Alabama.
And that's exactly how everyone's thinking of it. Who's the other?
That's exactly.
Is the other going to be the one who just forget your UConn, forget Purdue, forget this story in NC State? What about Alabama? Yeah.
They have the highest offensive floor and ceiling.
We're going to come out and we're going to just chuck threes for 40 minutes.
They did it to Maryland last year in the tournament. That's how Maryland went out to Alabama.
The only thing Alabama has going against them in terms of rooting interest is they have a football program that's won a whole lot. Why do we need the basketball program?
That doesn't bother me. I've heard that argument too.
I don't really go with that narrative, but it's like, I don't really need
that. I've heard that argument too. And I just, it's different players, man. Yeah. It's pretty cool. It's their first one in school history, right? The first Final Four in school history. So that's pretty cool. And then we're doing all this talking and they'll play the Final Four and we could be looking at UConn, Purdue, that Monday.
Well, the
night,
only the other final storyline is Virginia was the first team to lose to a 16 seed, UMBC, came back and
Baltimore
won it.
County, University of Maryland, Baltimore County. First time ever. 16 seed.
Love it.
Retrievers.
And then Purdue follows up by being the second team to only ever to lose to a 16 seed, and now here they are in the Final Four. If that were to repeat itself, that's a wild story too. Yeah. And it's very possible.
I a lot of people seem to not really like Purdue. Like, people like to hate on Zach Edey. I don't know if you stand on anything of that, but
he's very, very good. It's miserable to watch. It is not fun. I'm sorry. And I'm not going to sit here and say that I've watched every single minute in the tournament or this season of Purdue, but I did watch a decent chunk on Sunday. It was Easter. I was with the family. The games were on.
Yeah.
It's not like he's catching, pivoting in, pivoting out, pump faking and doing all these. He's catching the ball, bullying his way through someone, and just laying the ball in. Like, don't get me wrong. If you're dominant, be what you're dominant at. But it's not entertaining.
It's not finesse like watching DJ Burns, who's this giant human being.
My favorite player. I texted this, I think it was after the first game of the tournament, but I texted it and I said, he would be the most fun player in the tournament to play pickup basketball with.
Yeah.
Because he catches, he takes his one dribble, and he spins, and he's laying it up. Or he whips it across as soon as the double comes.
If he's double, he finds the open man every single time.
Zach Edey, he's an outstanding player. He's probably, didn't he win National Player of the Year last year? I think he might win it again this year. It's just and basketball is one of those sports where you don't see it as much as like you would see a baseball, a golf, probably not a football, where it's like people resonate, I would argue, with a guy that they could see themselves being, right? Like, oh, this guy who's 5'11 and made Jack Golke, for example, made 10 threes. You could imagine a world where you could go out there and
that's
do that,
how
right?
I play on the pickup, right?
Exactly.
Yeah.
Nobody can be a Zach Edey.
No.
I feel like, for me personally, whoever wins the Purdue NC State game, I'm rooting for in the championship game, regardless of what happens. Purdue and North Carolina State are two campuses I've actually been on. So
there you go. My Edey stance is
interesting.
Yeah.
The referee's job is impossible.
Oh, yeah.
There's all these different sides of which side you want to be on. They call too many. They don't call enough. Let them play. Yeah. Well, no, it's a foul. Call a foul. If it's a foul and you call a foul for Zach Edey, their entire team will foul out.
That's
he gets fouled every single
that's
play.
That's the thing with college, too, is the foul game is so much different than it is in the NBA. You get five. You play 2 20-minute halves. If you get two fouls, see you for the rest of the first half. So
those refs have to find a line with how they're going to call him, because if you do it the right way and you call a foul every time someone fouls him, they won't have a team by halftime. and your game will just look, it'll look.
That's been the running joke, right? It's, DJ Burns already picked up his first foul.
Yeah, that's why that matchup could, it might not be what we hope to be, because Burns might be in foul trouble 10 minutes into that game, and you might not see a lot of them just by the styles they play against each other. But that's that. Before we get off of that, who is your final pick? Without your bracket, just of the four teams left, who you got winning it, Logan?
I'll go Purdue.
What do you got, David?
I'll go UConn.
All right, I'll go Alabama. Don't want it, but. We'll okay. see. We'll see which of us is right.
Hopefully none of us, and hopefully it's NC State, because that would be a miraculous story. It's the first time since 83, right, that they've been back there.
That 83 team is one of the coolest stories in college basketball history.
And this one could be.
Yeah, NC State has the flair for it. Yeah. I mean, every 40 years, but
how about the women's side of March Madness?
I was going to say, we need to talk about that.
Absolutely.
We were all on the same page then. That's awesome.
The Elite Eight of the women's was awesome.
Yes, it was.
It was awesome. And there's star power, and it was just enjoyable basketball to watch.
I had the...
And we shouldn't be shocked by that. I mean, these are... They're just... It's electric right now in women's college basketball.
I thought about figuring out a way to go.
Yeah.
Because it was in Albany. But it just, with the Easter weekend and everything, it was too much to track, plus work. So I was at Canton Baseball Monday, and then I went home to my apartment, and I was doing all my writing from there, and I had the game on in the background, and it was just, I think I turned it on right before halftime, so it was tied at halftime, and then I was working, and it's just, Caitlin Clark three, automatic, she could not miss in that second half.
You say you got there right before halftime, or started watching before halftime. That first quarter was unbelievable. Did you watch the game?
Yeah.
Yeah, like, it was like 31-26 after one quarter.
The first half was as good of a half as I've watched all year in college basketball. Yeah. It lived up to the hype. But my takeaway, crazy enough, and we'll just kind of go round table with the whole tournament, it's Caitlin Clark. She's the best. Paige Beckers?
Yeah. Yeah.
Might not be very far behind.
Well, so, okay, correct me if I'm wrong, and you guys might not be able to attest to it, but Paige Beckers had the star power that Caitlin Clark eventually took over.
And got hurt.
She got hurt. Yep. And that's kind of, I feel like, around that same time when Caitlin Clark really ascended.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So are they playing next week?
So here we go.
That's the second Final Four game.
Okay. So exactly. So, and that's been the interesting thing too. And it's something I feel like we're seeing in the women's game that we're not seeing in the men's game, maybe because of transfer portal movement.
Yeah.
But there's so many storylines. Like it was Clark versus LSU again. She got her lick back, so to speak, right? And now she's going to go against Beckers, who she sort of took, I guess you would say, took the crown from as the most well-known player, and the biggest star in the women's game. So
Beckers has to beat freshman phenom Juju Watkins from USC to get there. But meanwhile, all the way on the other side of the bracket is this undefeated juggernaut
South Carolina
who nobody can beat.
Yeah.
So it's just storylines everywhere. It's been awesome.
It has been very fun to watch. I've always appreciated women's college basketball because they use four quarters instead of two halves. I like the two halves in the men's game, but there's just something so interesting about how you coach differently.
I also feel like it just goes quicker. I mean, it's just an easier watch sometimes.
Is men's college basketball the last level of basketball to have one-on-one foul shooting?
I think so.
That's crazy. Like, just change it now.
I've always liked one and one. I have no issue with one and one.
I don't either, but it's like you're the only one.
You're the last one doing it.
That was an adjustment for me when this basketball season started up here, because I, growing up, had always known one and one, playing, watching, coaching, refereeing, whatever. Mm-hmm. So when it was just like automatic two foul shots at five fouls, I'm like, okay, that feels like a mega reward.
When did the NBA change it? Because they definitely had one-on-ones until recently.
I've never known an NBA with one-on-ones.
Really?
But maybe that's because the shot making's at such a high level that I just never would have noticed. But I don't recall. Okay.
Yeah,
NBA
I don't remember
it.
When they switched either.
I was home this weekend for Easter, and we were talking about the same situation, and he mentioned to me that there used to be you have three attempts to make two shots at the free throw line, which was a real NBA thing until 1982.
Really?
I wasn't born.
Well, yeah, I had never once heard of that until Sunday when my dad and I were talking about it. I can't remember the exact situation. I think it might have been like, especially if you made a shot and you were fouled, you got two attempts to get one extra point. That was a thing until 1981, or 82 or whatever, which was my dad at that time.
The plumbers and firemen era.
So that actually...
Plumbers and firemen. Yeah.
Now that I'm thinking about it, that rule change when my dad was my age now at 29. Right. So,
wow.
Yeah, he remembered it. I had no clue that was a thing. So
that's crazy.
Yeah.
Let's go to baseball. MLB is officially underway. We had opening weekend and opening day last week. Let's start. The majority of our listeners are Philadelphia based. Let's get in. Let's go Phillies first. Phillies opened with the Braves. They're now in their final game of this Red Series.
Yes.
Yeah.
But, you know, the
gosh darn it.
What? Did you replace it?
I must have. Yeah.
The song's gone.
Sorry forever. If you just heard all of our sound. I thought I had the Dancing on My Own still cued on this board.
But that's our soundboard, ladies and gentlemen.
Yeah, that was our soundboard. Shout out to our producer, Logan Hill.
Five games in. How are we feeling?
It's early.
Yeah.
They're 2-3.
That's the most measured take I think I've ever heard you have about
this. It's early.
I'm more measured than you think I am. After the first two games were kind of disastrous with the pitching. It just and the offense wasn't awake yet. It was really ugly the first two games against Atlanta. I'll take 2-3 because at least they kind of rebounded. They had a 3-run seventh of the inning to come back against Atlanta on Sunday. It was like, all right, cool. We needed a win like that just to feel good about things. And then they had another awful game against Cincinnati on Monday. But last night, Tuesday night, Bryce Harper
gave you a moment already.
That's the best thing about baseball. That's why I love baseball so much. You just never know what you're going to see. And then Bryce Harper just seems to step up in the moment every single time.
He quickly ended the news cycle about him falling over the dugout railing.
Jeter would have made that catch.
I'm not going to get into it, but that first inning on Saturday was the most insane inning of baseball I've ever watched in my life. But Harper was 0-11 to start the season. Then the first at bat he has on Tuesday, home run, left center field, just finished Bryce. Like, all right, awesome, he's good. Then he hits a rocket to right field for another one. And then bases loaded, full count, one out in the seventh inning, I believe it was. It's like, what else is Bryce Harper going to do?
Don't hit the table.
I'm so sorry. So sorry.
Make that a sound on the soundboard. Just David hit the table.
Just awesome to watch that. Yeah. And 2-3, and the Braves are 3-2. So they didn't exactly lose a whole lot of ground in the first two games of the season.
Good news, the Mets haven't won a game, so. You don't have to worry about the Mets this season.
It's a pretty good job by the schedule makers to do Phillies Braves to start the year.
Yeah.
I wasn't a fan of it, but, you know.
Would you rather?
Well, no, the reason for that is because 2019 and 2021 were the exact same three-game home series against Atlanta to begin the year. So I just kind of want
something different.
Something different. And what's funny about that, though, is the Phillies swept the Braves in both of those previous series. The Braves made the playoffs and the Phillies didn't in both of those seasons. So maybe it's a good thing that the Phillies lost the opening series to Atlanta this time around.
About your Orioles? On their way to repeat?
Repeat what? Winning the division? Hopefully, yes. Hopefully, yes. It's looked good. And this is where the new, I guess, back and forth will go, Yankees-Orioles. Because I guess we didn't have a true rivalry at the table in football season.
By the time we had got started, it was pretty clear the Yankees weren't going to be able to
I meant football wise, like the Ravens and the Bills are in the AFC race. Eagles and Cowboys.
Rivalry in football.
I'm sorry, and not to punch them. Okay, relax. The best rivalry in football.
That might be the best rivalry. Deciding who is the best rivalry. The way this pod goes.
I guess I just always forget because I'm not going to take the Cowboys seriously until the day that I have to. So
yeah,
but. This is the new, I guess, rivalry at the table: Orioles, Yankees. I don't know. I think the
you're
Orioles.
You're scared. It's scary what you're seeing right now to start this season.
You think?
I think so. I think the Yankees look pretty scary.
Biggest payroll in baseball?
That's how you play baseball, man.
That's how you play baseball. You were just saying how cool it is for baseball to schedule the Phillies Braves as a big rivalry at the opening week. Yankees Astros is a huge series for the open
swept
the season.
Them. Right off the face of the earth.
Let's see it in October.
Let's just get there first.
One of us
didn't make it to October last season, so I got to be careful how hard I go early on.
We were talking when we got started. The Orioles started out, I think they're 3-2 right now. Yes. They 2-1 over the Angels, 1-1 right now with the Royals. I think the finale's today. In the games that they've won, they've been mashing at the plate. In the games that they've lost, they've scored one run. So I didn't grow up playing baseball. I played 1 year. We won the championship. I still have the ring somewhere probably. I was on the Lakeshore Cardinals. Respect.
Shout out.
Shout out, literally. So, I mean, they've been good. Corbin Burns had an electric debut. Yeah. He wasn't supposed to be the opening day starter. It was going to be Bradish, but Bradish got hurt, I believe, in spring training, so he's rehabbing. So Burns to Baltimore has been good to start so far.
Burns not being the opening day starter is weird in and of itself.
I think Bradish earned the right to be the – he had a great year last year.
Burns is a Cy Young winner, so that you know.
Yeah, but maybe just start with the guy that's been there, but Bradish ended up getting hurt, so Burns went on the bump. He had 11 strikeouts, I think, in that opening day game. Mm-hmm. Mike Trout hit a solo home run, and the Angels lost 11-3 or something like that.
It was Trout's first at bat of the season.
Yeah. So, but yeah, I'm feeling good. People are up in arms online and maybe around town. The Jackson Holiday starting the year in AAA, so he'll be up soon enough.
That's what I was going to ask. I couldn't remember his name.
He'll be up soon enough, and I don't know where he fits in to the infield yet, but
so young. Wow. That team is just,
how are we feeling about the Yankees? Juan Soto's had a good start to the Yankees tenure.
He's pretty decent. Good thing we picked him up. They said yesterday on the broadcast, Garrett Cole actually jumped on commentary for the second inning, said his rehab is ahead of schedule, going smoothly, avoided surgery. He'll be back as predicted. He'll be back when they predicted he would be back. So we'll see him in June, which is a big break for the Yankees. Judge hasn't even gotten going yet, which is somewhat of a concern over multiple seasons, but hitting behind Soto, it's going to work out. I'm having a fun time early on watching the young guys. For the last few years, when it's LeMahieu, Stanton, Rizzo, and your young guys, Judge, it's like, man, kind of old. Now Juan Soto's 25. Anthony Volpe is a Gold Glover his rookie season. Oswaldo Cabrera is having as good a start as any player in Major League Baseball. Seeing the young guys running the bases and getting after it and scream, Alex Verdugo comes over from the Red Sox and didn't know how I was going to feel about him. He's out there screaming after every big play. It just looks like the Yankees are excited to play baseball and not just the big bankroll team that is just, oh, man, we're all a bunch of highly paid mercenaries here. They're having fun and it's showing so far. But as David said, and Logan will agree, it's very early. We're only in the first week of.
This will all change. Maybe like what 1% into the baseball season.
The Phillies had horrible starts the last two seasons and made the NLCS and World Series in both of those years. So it's just like it doesn't matter right now.
How did those seasons go? I was joking.
Better than the Orioles.
This is what we want to do, boys.
I'll have to check the trophy case when we get out of here.
Let's talk.
See how many you guys have.
My hot take for MLB this season, and it's going off of your series with the Angels. A healthy Mike Trout should be in.
Please let him be.
I think he's going to win the MVP.
I hope so. I love him.
I think he got swept under the rug a little bit with Ohtani on his team last season. He always is battling injuries, which is always his knock. But for the first half of his career, and some people may even still think it now, he might be the best player we've ever seen play. Yeah. He looks pretty good, healthy to start so far.
That's the one place I guess we haven't touched today is the Ohtani.
Yeah.
Big scandal, I guess. But I don't know enough about it to really speak on it. That's been a major story. It seems like something's not quite adding up, but there's people smarter than me on the case.
That's where I'm at. I'm at the same place as you. It seems like something isn't right, but the people that are smarter than us talking about it seem to think this will all be okay for Ohtani.
But not to take you off your Mike
Trout. No, it's a good point because you're talking about the face of baseball. I don't know how I feel about it. I think it just brings a lot more attention, as from podcast is always jokingly saying gamble responsibly and everything. It brings a lot of attention to sports gambling and props and what could happen because we're having it in basketball now with multiple players over since we've been off. But it's something to keep an eye on, let's say that.
But yeah, no, Trout is just, he's been crazy his whole career. Just so good, and the Angels have just been so bad. Yeah. So I wouldn't mind that. I wouldn't mind a Mike Trout MVP season.
Mike Trout, Soto could win it simply by playing at the short porch in Yankee Stadium as a left-handed hitter and being a generational hitter that he is and hitting ahead of Judge, so you can't necessarily just put him on base. Does a lot for him. Anyone else with some long shot MVPs? Harper.
I mean, look, if you have a 3 home run game this year, early in the season. He might just be starting to get on a roll.
He's got the star power because that's part of it. You need star power.
You
got
to have
Bryce Harper's got the star power to be in that conversation.
I like Harper as a long shot too.
If I had to pick someone from the Orioles, I'd say Gunnar Henderson. I think he's probably still too young, but.
I was listening to a Baseball Tonight podcast like on my way back up here on Monday, and it was basically an hour-long bold prediction stuff, and someone said Michael Harris of the Braves, which is bold because he might not be the best player in that lineup,
yeah.
But he's a young guy who has kind of killed the Phillies a little bit,
and
too.
And could benefit for where he hits in the lineup.
Yeah, so...
Does he lead off?
No. Okay. Who the heck? Did Acuna leaves off?
Yeah.
Yeah, no, Michael Harris Jr. kind of sprung onto the scene as a rookie 2 years ago, and he's been electric. The Braves have been so good at scouting, apparently. Yeah. So, but I don't know. That was just an interesting name I saw. I was like, he is very good. So,
a couple local teams to wrap up with, one going in one direction, another going the other way. The Mets are bad. The Pirates are good.
The Pirates are 5-0, or they were 5-0 for the first time since, I think, 83 or 81. Yeah. So
I think they are 5-0 right now.
I don't think they're going to hang around. I don't think they're going to hang around at the top, but I think there's enough in that lineup to be optimistic about where they're going.
I mean, a 5-0 start like that for a team that's been so bad, that just the morale of that team is sky high compared to a few years. So maybe that you could carry that into like a good season.
On the left
season.
Side of their infield too, O'Neill Cruz and Key Brian Hayes, and then they got Paul Skeens down in the minors
say,
right now.
He's coming up soon enough.
There's
right?
enough to be excited about in Pittsburgh, that's for sure. Yeah. And to be competitive early on is a lot more than they've had in the past.
The Mets are really bad. The Rhys Hoskins versus Mets rivalry is my favorite.
Yeah, that was good.
Rhys Hoskins is still a Philly.
And then when they decided to throw at him, it was silly. Yeah, but.
If you're going to do it, just do it immediately instead of after he's 3-for-3 with 4 RBIs on him.
Yeah, you do it the so next weak. At bat.
I don't care. I play a decent amount of MLB The Show.
Yeah.
You make me mad, I'm throwing.
You throwing at
you. It's an approach. Anytime someone fouls off 5 pitches off of me, I'm throwing at them.
That feels like a waste because then you just wasted the at bat.
I can't
risk a 6th. My mental capacity won't risk a 6th.
Let me end the pitch count now.
I forget who it was. I was playing, I do every year, starting Orioles franchise, and I was playing the opening game, and the Angels just could not stop scoring runs. It did not matter what I did. They just could not stop scoring runs. Like, I had a 6-run inning to tie the game. They put 5 on the board in the next inning. I just was like, I'm not supposed to win today. So I think it was somebody in their lineup, not Rendon.
who does not care about baseball.
Yeah, but that's a story for another day. Yes. But if someone in the middle of their lineup, and he pimped one off me, big home run, and I was like, sorry, you're taking a fastball to the back the next time you come up. So,
all right, that is our recap after 2 weeks off. Going forward, we'll have plenty of spring sports to talk about locally. We will have our Final Four. We'll have our championship in both the men's and women's to talk about, and we'll keep talking MLB as the season progresses.
A little bit of a roller coaster ride today on the podcast, but we probably should have foreseen that.
Yeah, we've been off for 2 weeks. Yeah. We'll get our footing again.
And we're going to end this on one more little roller coaster because, once again, I'm going to keep going when this podcast was about to be signed off on.
We're going to have to start cutting your mic once we do this.
But this is Joel Embiid is back for the 76ers. And they will beat the number one seed in the West with his first game back. I'm buying
Two guys were out of the lineup for the Thunder.
Maxey wasn't playing for the Sixers. So, I might be buying back into the Sixers.
You're buying back in?
Maybe.
Anyone want to jump on Jalen Brunson? Jalen Brunson stock? Buy now.
I don't want to talk about the Eastern Conference because the Lakers are 10 games over 500. They're closer to the one seed in the West than the two seed in the East is to the one seed.
Well, Kirk didn't want to talk about the Bills either, so.
Yeah. Let's not talk about the Bills or any other teams anymore. Let's get out of here. We'll get everyone back next week. A lot of spring sports coming up. If you haven't yet, get out and get a copy or subscribe to both the Daily Review and the Morning Times. Follow Logan and David as much as you can. They're going to have a lot of great stuff for you this spring. And until next time, we'll see you later. Enjoy the weekend and hope you had a great Easter.